roll another blunt. Yeah. Oh, good.
La da 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 da. La da da da. La da da da. La da da da. La da da da. Yeah. I was gonna clean my room until I got high. I was gonna get up and find the broom, but then I got high. La, da, my room da, da, da. Is still messed up, and I know why.
Why, man?
Yeah, cause I got high. Because I got high. Hell because yeah. I got high. La, da, 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 da. I was gonna go to class before I got high.
Come on, y'all.
Check it out. I could've cheated and I could've passed, but I got high.
La, da,
I'm taking da, da, da. It next semester, and I know why.
Why, man? Why?
Yeah, cause I got high. Because I got high. Because I got high.
Go to the next. Go to the next. Go to the next.
Do as you wish this morning. After all, it's completely legal in Canada now. And you wonder why that was the promise the big guy kept, eh? No, not the big guy that comes on December the 25th. The big guy that you heard during All News Mornings today with Christine Clark and Luke Schultz, who is defiantly staying in position as leader of the Liberal Party and our prime minister. But I'm not going to say any more about that because I told you last week I'm already bored of that story. However, I thought what better day than a Monday to start the show with a bit of a novelty song for you. And it was on this day in 2001 that Afro Man, yeah, Joseph Foreman, better known as Afro Man, began a 2-week run at number one on the singles charts with Because I Got High, the song about how cannabis was degrading his quality of life, rose from obscurity to popularity after what? It was circulated around the internet. And so, you are welcome. We start the day with Because I Got High from Afro Man. This day is the 28th of October. It will be November before the end of the week. Let that sink in for just a minute, okay? But here we are, and some warm weather is on the way as well. Hope the day is off to a great start. Thank you very much for making some time to spend with us here at the radio station. Your time is very valuable, and we certainly appreciate you making time for us and engaging in some conversation. And I need to start the show today. I'm sorry. It's not meant to be the pop quiz, it sounds like, but I do have a question. I'm just curious if you can help me answer this question. Anyone, have the Kitchener Rangers stopped winning hockey games yet? Have they stopped winning?
Reed over now to Romano. Cross ice missile. Jemmick scores! Overtime! Game over!
Okay, so what you're telling me is the answer is no, the Kitchener Rangers have not yet stopped winning hockey games. Now, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, Farwell, I've heard this before. Like, why are you starting your show the same way? Is this a repeat show? No, it's not. It is not a best of slash least worst edition of the Mike Farwell Show. I did ask the same question last Monday morning after the Kitchener Rangers won all three games last weekend. But the Kitchener Rangers went out this weekend and they won both of their games again. And as I look at my calendar, the last time the Kitchener Rangers lost a game in regulation time was September the 28th, 1 month ago today. So we have played hockey on four consecutive weekends, and the Kitchener Rangers have lost precisely zero of those games over four weekends in regulation time. 9 wins, 0 regulation losses, 1 overtime loss, 1 shootout loss. I also know you're thinking, Farwell, this is going to come to an end at some point. Like, stop talking about it so much. I'm merely pointing out to you the facts of the case, Your Honor. 4 weekends, and we have not seen the Rangers lose in regulation. Yes, they will eventually sometime maybe lose again. It'll happen. But there's no such thing as a jinx just from talking about it. And I wanted you to know it was another successful weekend for your Kitchener Rangers. They're going to be back at the Memorial Auditorium tomorrow night. We were in Erie on Saturday where Adrian Misiljevic scored that overtime winner. Kitchener 4, the Otters 3. Tomorrow night, Sarnia Sting in town. If you'd like to join us at the Kitchener Memorial Auditorium, I checked in for you this morning. Yes, there are some good seats available. All right, let's get to your Farewell Show 5 for this Monday morning. Number one, unlike the Kitchener Rangers, well, the Toronto Maple Leafs have been losing hockey games, but Austin Matthews has still been scoring goals, and since his initials are AM, and this is your favorite AM radio station in the AM part of the day, here's AM's game-tying goal against Boston from Saturday night. We call this AM on AM in the AM.
Stolarz edging out of the goal. The pass ahead to Matthews. He'll get to the bench for an extra attacker. Cross the line with a pass, and they score! Matthews cutting across in front of the goal, and a wrist shot from the right point is redirected home to tie the game.
The Leafs take on the Jets tonight in Winnipeg. You can hear the game on 570 News Radio starting at 7. Number two, the University of Waterloo will today celebrate the groundbreaking of its new math building. Mathematics 4 will be a five-story, 120,000-square-foot facility that will serve as the heart of the math district on campus. The groundbreaking happens this morning at 11. Number three on your Farewell Show 5 this morning, the federal government says national cooperation is needed to close the loopholes that criminals can use to resell stolen vehicles. Transportation Minister Anita Anand says revinning is a big problem. That's the process by which the vehicle identification number is altered and then the vehicle resold. However, Ontario's Transportation Minister Pravmeet Sarkaria says bail reform is a bigger concern for him.
Criminals are getting back out into our communities, stealing multiple cars, sometimes in the same day, sometimes getting arrested just after getting bail in court parking lots. So it's something that the federal government also needs to step up on.
Are we stealing cars in court parking lots? Is that what I'm hearing there? I want to meet the person that gets out from their court case and then tries to steal a car in the court parking lot. I love it. The number of stolen vehicles in Canada has dropped this year compared to last, but the federal government says revinning is on the rise. Number four, Ontario is planning to extend a break on the provincial gas tax until next summer. Doug Ford expected to soon table legislation that will see the 5.7 cent per liter cut continue until the end of June 2025. The new law is also expected to extend the 5.3 cent per liter cut to the price of diesel fuel. And number five on your Farewell Show 5 this morning, it was a hometown rally for former President Donald Trump, who was at Madison Square Garden in New York last night. Speakers at the rally included former Fox TV host Tucker Carlson, TV psychologist Dr. Phil, and pro wrestler Hulk Hogan.
The energy in here is something like I've never felt. The energy of all these Trumpomaniacs is the most powerful force in the universe. And today, this is Donald Trump's house, brother. You know something, Trumpomaniacs? I don't see no stinking Nazis in here. I don't see no stinking domestic terrorists in here. The only thing I see in here are a bunch of hard-working men and women that are real Americans, brother.
The U.S. election is on November the 5th. That's next Tuesday, just 8 days away. And that is your Farewell Show 5 for this Monday morning. Quick break, back with more. Fill your ears with information here on the Mike Farewell Show, 570 News Radio. It is always a good morning when you can ring up a friend just to have a little chat. And that friend in question is Tony Dowling, who's a member of the Kiwanis Club of Elmira. You don't mind me introducing you as a friend, do you, Tony?
I think we're okay with that, Mike.
Okay, thank goodness. I worry sometimes because, you know, I might be speaking out of turn. You're a generally good guy. Me, you never know. You just never know what you're going to get. How was the weekend, my friend?
My weekend was good, but I do have to say you put me in a spot this morning. I have never, ever in my life on your show had to follow Hulk Hogan.
You know, I was just listening to him, and I watched a bit of that speech he gave last night at the Trump rally. I know why it only went on for 6 minutes and a bit, because he's 71 years old, and it can't be easy talking like that for so long. My goodness.
I'm not even going to try.
I wouldn't blame you for not. Listen, if you're going to follow up Hulk Hogan, though, let's follow up with a big month ahead for Kiwanis in Elmira, including your food funds drive. You want to start there?
Sure, we can. And I know there are a lot of food drives going on right now, and that sort of speaks to the immensity of the challenge that we have in Canada and North America and around the world right now in terms of food shortages. But our event is kind of unique. We've been doing a food drive in Elmira and Woolwich for over 20 years. But in 2020, during COVID, we pivoted. And instead of going door-to-door collecting food, we dropped off door-hanger flyers across pretty much all the municipalities in Woolwich. And then we encourage people to donate online to Woolwich Community Services or to go to our drop-off points this coming Friday and Saturday to drop off cash or checks.
So where can folks show up, Tony, to do those drop? I love the idea. The door hangers throughout the township so that people can bring their food donations or their cash and check donations to those spots in the community. Where can they do that?
Kitchen Cuttings in Elmira, The Home Hardware in Elmira or St. Jacobs, Harvest Moon Restaurant St. Jacobs, Shoppers Drug Mart, Foodland, Food Basics. And so those are the seven. But again, also online at WoolwichCommunityServices.org. You can do an online donation there. And it's been a tremendously successful program. We've got about 150 volunteers involved in the door hangers and manning the table at those locations.
It's a terrific way to do it, and if there's a good thing to come from the pandemic pivot, this would be one of them. I think just in terms of the manpower it saves, instead of going door-to-door to collect those donations, having those spots around the community, and you mentioned there are seven of them along with that online portal, give me the online URL again, please.
Yeah, the online is WoolwichCommunityServices.org.
Good. WoolwichCommunityServices.org. I think it's a great way for the Kiwanis Club to do that. So good on you.
Yeah, and not just the Kiwanis Club. So, you know, this really became a community-wide event. So we had the Kiwanis involved, Glenrose Lodge Freemasons, the Woolwich Lions, Optimist Club of Elmira and St. Jacobs, St. Jacobs Lions Club, Scouts, Knights of Columbus, PSS Robotics Team, and Florida Friends of Dog Guys. So it really is a true get-together barn-raising community activity.
Tony, I'm so sorry, but your phone is coming in and out on me. Are you on the road right now? Are you moving?
I'm not. No, but let me turn the car off. That may help.
Okay, let's try that, just because I don't want any of this important information getting away from us. And I don't want you to draw. If your hand's free, we'll figure out a way to get your hands on. But
Okay,
how are we now, Mike?
Oh, my goodness, Tony, bless your heart. It sounds so much better.
Good.
Okay, so we've got the food and funds drive covered here, and WoolwichCommunityServices.org is a website you can go to along with those locations in the community that you mentioned. Also, we're not that far away. My goodness, November, I already mentioned, starts later this week, and the Elmira Kiwanis Santa Claus Parade is coming up as well.
Yeah, we're collecting for the food fund drive this Friday and Saturday at those locations. The parade is November the 30th, then we have the carol sing on the covered bridge on December 16th. So, busy month coming up.
Yeah, it certainly is. And that covered bridge carol sing is a pretty special night, isn't it?
Yeah, it's magical.
It's the perfect setting for it, and you bring everybody there, and you've got this really cool acoustic environment as well.
It's the reason why a lot of musical instruments are made out of wood.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. Yeah. Is there a site that we can visit online to keep up with what you're doing at the Elmira Kiwanis Club, Tony?
Yeah, we're on Facebook.
As
Elmira Kiwanis Club.
Elmira Kiwanis Club. Okay. But the big push is, as we move forward through this week, let's get those food donations and those funds dropped off at those locations around the township.
Yeah, all those service clubs and, as I say, EDS Robotics and Guide Dogs and all those guys have been out dropping off hangers. So by all means, or take advantage, get it and drop this stuff on, hop or get into whichmediaservices.org and make a donation.
All right. Tony, keep up the great work. Thanks so much for making time for the show this morning.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. No more Hulk Hogan.
No more Hulk Hogan. Okay, take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Tony Dowling, a member of the Elmira Kiwanis Club, letting us know that they are in full force with their food and funds drive through the month of November, those drop-off locations this Friday and Saturday. And then at the end of the month, it's the annual Santa Claus Parade. And then on December the 16th, looking further ahead. But I've been to this covered bridge carol sing before, and it is, it's beautiful. It's just, the setting is magical, of course, there at the West Montrose covered bridge, and you can sing some Christmas carols till your heart's content, and you even get some warm apple cider while you're there. This is the Mike Farwell Show on 570 News Radio. Just a couple of minutes away from 9:30, your update in the 570 News Center, which allows me the couple necessary minutes to thank our good guy on the other side of the glass, Colin Wobbles Robertson, who will be answering the phones when you call in to be a part of the conversation today. Colin always brings coffee with him to work. I don't know what I did to deserve it, but I appreciate it. And I got to say, this huge chain that gets a lot of heat, not because of the temperature of the coffee, although it is about as hot as a coffee as you'll find, but I love it. I don't know why it gets picked on as much as it does. So to you, Wobbles, I extend a tremendous and genuine thank you for your generosity and for picking this particular brand of coffee today.
No problem. I'm glad that you enjoy it, because when I need to wake up, it is the one I go for.
I find that every time I drink one, I want another one. Like, I've often wondered, not to get too conspiratorial here, but if they don't put something in there that makes you want to / need to go back.
I think it's memories.
That, you know what?
I think it's nostalgia.
Every sip.
Yeah.
I think we just came up with their new ad campaign.
You're welcome.
Every sip is a sip of nostalgia.
You're welcome, coffee brand we're not naming.
Exactly. They don't need any help from us, but underrated / appreciated, in my opinion. It's not going to knock your socks off, but it's more than fine. They probably don't want that on their advertising. You're more than fine. It's a more than fine cup
of coffee. I actually like that more.
All right, let's get you an update from the 570 News Center. And then that outdoor managed encampment on Herbs Road. Is it just a Band-Aid in our efforts to combat homelessness? We'll talk about it coming up on the Mike Farwell Show. This is 570 News Radio. You might remember a recent editorial in the Waterloo Region Record, penned by Wilmot Mayor Natasha Salonen, suggesting that what we're doing when it comes to the Herbs Road outdoor managed encampment isn't really a solution. It's more of a temporary fix to the homelessness problem. And if you were following conversations at regional council since, you can hear a number of different opinions as to our various approaches in this community to combating homelessness. In fact, at last week's meeting of regional council, there was some pretty animated back and forth between councillors as to what we're doing, why we're doing it, and if indeed it is even effective. Jeffrey Nelson is a professor emeritus of psychology at Wilfrid Laurier University. He also co-chairs the Canadian Housing First Network, and he joins our show to talk about this. And Jeffrey, I wonder if we can start with the various approaches we are seeing in this community to combating homelessness. We've got a Better Tent City. We've got that Herbs Road encampment. We've got numerous shelters, of course, around the community. How do you view our approaches to date?
Well, I think in addition to the shelters and sites like a Better Tent City and the Herbs Road project, we do have a Housing First project. And in my view, it doesn't get as much attention, and it's being very successful. It's called Paths to Home, and it embodies all of the principles of Housing First. And from my understanding, that program's is very successful. It's working really well. It's helping people get stable housing and to keep stable housing, as well as other benefits to them. So there are really some positive things happening in our community around this housing first approach that I think we need to strengthen.
It's funny you mentioned Paths to Home because I'd kind of forgotten about it. I don't hear about it an awful lot, but that's a program being run through the region, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, it's run by Lutherwood,
right,
and it is funded by the region. And I would agree with you that it doesn't get enough attention. There seems to be a lot more attention to sort of crisis management approaches, which are, you know, quite visible to people in the community. And there's these new ideas about, you know, creating better tent cities and shelters and things like that for people who are suffering. But we don't hear the success stories. And I think it would be useful to hear more about the success stories of what we're doing.
You mentioned, Jeffrey, the parallels between Paths to Home and the Housing First model, which I think was pioneered in Finland. But nonetheless, Housing First is something we have heard about. Can you explain the principles of Housing First and what makes it successful?
Yes, actually, Housing First was started by a Canadian, Dr. Sam Samberis. He's a clinical community psychologist. And he was doing his training in New York City, and once he finished, he started a program in New York City called Housing First or Pathways to Home, and that program was very successful. It also led to a number of research studies that evaluated the effectiveness, starting in New York City, but then in Canada with our five-city study that was called At Home Chez Soi. So the Housing First approach is used with people who are have mental illness and chronic homelessness. Oftentimes they have addictions as well, but it's really for people with mental illness. The history is that it has focuses on people with mental illness who've been homeless. And the principles of it were very progressive that Dr. Samberis came up with. One is that we should really emphasize choice and self-determination of the people who are going to be housed or served by the program. That really changed, turn things on its head, because in the past it had always been that professionals or service providers thought they knew what was best for clients. So they'd have outreach programs or they'd have drop-ins. And when Sam Samberis started talking to people on the streets of New York City with mental illness, people that he knew who'd come out of the hospital, he asked them what they needed, and it wasn't a sandwich or it wasn't a warm place, a place to warm up. They wanted their own houses, their own homes. So that's been an important part, is how do you get people housing immediately without having them jump through a bunch of hoops or go through a number of other programs that are designed to prepare them for housing. Let's get them in housing right away. And if you help them find the place that they want. So that's a major principle of Housing First, is choice. Where do people want to live? With whom? What area of the city? Because that puts the consumer in the driver's seat of his or her own experience. And getting a stable house is a necessary part to helping a person to recover. So that's another principle, is recovery. In the past, we've looked at people with mental illness as, you know, once you're mentally ill, you're always mentally ill. But this notion of recovery takes a different view and says, what can people do? What can people have? What resources are needed to bring to bear to help them in their own recovery from mental illness, to have better lives, to be able to be active in the community, to meet their goals, pursue their ambitions and dreams. So recovery is a key theme, and that's also a theme that comes from people who've experienced mental illness. And I would say the last one that's really important is community integration. How do people integrate into the community if they've been excluded through homelessness or mental illness? And that doesn't mean just being in the community, although that's important, but it means being psychologically attached to their neighborhood or community and being socially integrated into the community so that they have relationships with neighbors and friends and associates and settings that they go to live their daily lives. So if we look at all of those, it's choice, it's recovery, it's community integration. And those, I think, are foundational to any approach to homelessness with people with mental illness.
We're in conversation with Jeffrey Nelson, Professor Emeritus of Psychology at Wilfrid Laurier University and the co-chair of the Canadian Housing First Network. So now we understand what Housing First is. Could it work here? Is there enough money for it here based on what we're already spending? We'll continue the conversation with Jeffrey Nelson here on the Mike Farwell Show this morning, 570 News Radio. Jeffrey Nelson is with us on the show this morning. Jeffrey is a professor emeritus of psychology at Wilfrid Laurier University and the co-chair of the Canadian Housing First Network. And there is a program here in the region called Paths to Home, funded by the region, that maybe doesn't get the attention that it deserves. But Jeffrey was able to shine some light on that this morning. And then we look at this scattershot approach, if you will, the array of different options we're providing to combat homelessness and this plan to end chronic homelessness in our community by 2030. But we've got a Better Tent City. We've got the Herbs Road shelter. We've got our shelter system. We've got tent communities that by law, through a provincial court ruling, we are not able to remove. So instead, we provide services to those living in tent communities. And I wonder, Jeffrey, when you consider the full scope of what it is we're trying to do, if perhaps you think it's a little bit wrongheaded because we're not putting a laser focus on the housing first principles.
Well, I think the homelessness has become such a big problem that people are scrambling to try to deal with it. And I think there's a lot of really well-meaning people who are very caring, compassionate, and they want to see people get something where they are not going to be out in the Canadian winter and jeopardizing their health. So that sometimes means latching on to ideas or coming up with ideas and not looking enough at some of the research that shows that housing first is really the way to go with this problem. We know that the approaches like the shelters and other things that you mentioned in our study at home Chez Soi in Canada, done in five cities, that's what we would call usual treatment. These are the services that communities typically offer. And those in a randomized controlled design were compared with Housing First, which provided people with a rent supplement and a support program, either assertive community treatment or intensive case management. In every case, in every city, the Housing First group improved significantly more than those who were in this usual treatment, the usual array of services that we have. They're more stably housed. Their quality of life improves. They get better housing. They function better in the community. So we need to really, I think, highlight, strengthen, augment that approach, which we have, but I think we need to look to it more.
So here then, Jeffrey, is the million-dollar question, quite literally. And let's use Herb's Road as an example because it's in the news recently, and there's been some discussion around whether or not it's the right approach, for example. $2.6 million is the latest amount we're investing to keep Herb's Road running until 2030 at least. Would it cost us more to move to a housing-first approach?
Well, I've looked at the costs for the at-home Shea Swap project of Housing First, and the cost outlay is about the same for actually the most intensive support program that not everyone needs, but certainly there are some people who need it. It's called assertive community treatment. And updating the cost to $24 for 2024, if we were to serve 100 people with assertive community treatment in Housing First, it would cost about $2.6 million, about the same. So the question is, why aren't we doing that? The other thing I think that's important to understand is we did a costing study with At Home Chez Soi, and we found that for the highest need people, 69% of the costs of the Housing First program were offset by reductions in costs for other services, people in shelters, people going to hospitals. Those are expensive services, people using emergency room services. So 69% is a pretty good reduction from the total amount. So by my figures, now a program that would serve 100 people would initially cost around $2.6 million. I think with the cost offsets, if those hold, the program ends up being about $800,000, which is good savings. So I think we need to look at how are we going to spend the money.
Jeffrey, I certainly appreciate your perspective on the show today. It's an important conversation for the community. Thank you very much for being here.
Okay, thank you.
Jeffrey Nelson is a professor emeritus of psychology at Wilfrid Laurier University. He co-chairs now the Canadian Housing First Network as well, and puts it pretty plainly. I mean, for the same money, by his calculations, we could be adopting a housing first approach here in the region, as opposed to what could arguably be described as a scattershot approach of Band-Aids. One over here and one over there and another one over here. What if we wrapped them all into the housing first approach? Your thoughts always welcome on the Mike Farwell Show. This is 570 News Radio.
CKGL AM Kitchener.
A Rogers radio station.
570.
Well, wouldn't you know that our first guest on the show today, Jeffrey Nelson, that retired professor of psychology from Wilfrid Laurier University, is on his way to Ottawa for a national conference to end homelessness, which opens today. So too is a member of our local Alliance Against Poverty, headed to Ottawa for that national conference on ending homelessness. And I'm not sure there is a bigger issue facing our communities or our country today. Yes, we talk a lot about addictions and mental health, and I think there are connections between all three: addictions, mental health, and the lack of safe and affordable housing. So we'll continue that conversation with our local poverty activist coming up after the 10 a.m. news. Also, because this is Monday, David Drew will join us, as he always does, for Drew's Views between 11:30 and noon. And we'll open up the phone lines for a full hour from noon until 1 for Rant or Rave. That's your 12 o'clock talkback hour today. You can get your rants or raves onto the show. Immediately after this update from the 570 News Center, let's talk about the National Conference on Ending Homelessness and what message we're taking from the region. This is the Mike Farwell Show on 570 News. The 2024 National Conference on Ending Homelessness will feature more than 100 sessions with more than 200 speakers covering more than a dozen streams of content. It's a lot. And in attendance at this national conference opening today is Regan Bruce, who's a member of the Alliance Against Poverty here in the region of Waterloo. Regan, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing all right, thanks. How are you?
I'm awake and ready to go. Now, I got to correct you right after off the bat.
Sure.
The Alliance Against Poverty unfortunately folded last year, I believe it was. So I still participate in these activities, but it would be alongside the Unsheltered campaign.
Okay. Well, thank you for the clarification on that. And so the Unsheltered campaign, through you, takes its message and its efforts to Ottawa. What is your feeling heading into a national conference on ending homelessness, Regan, especially considering, of course, how desperate the plight seems to be for so many?
Nervous and hopeful and just looking for some answers. I'm not sure what I'm going to walk into. I haven't had the opportunity to attend before. So I'm definitely looking forward to it and seeing what other municipalities are doing and what they have to share.
What answers is it that you're looking for?
Well, there's not going to be just one, Mike, and I don't know if we could cover all of them in just this show. I don't know. I mean, we're pretty overwhelmed locally with these situations, so looking to kind of see if there's anything that would fit well that, you know, we can bring to the table. There is quite a few of my colleagues and other stakeholders going as well, so they'll be looking and listening and learning what we can to bring back and see what we can help around here.
When you talk about how overwhelming the situation is locally, Regan, I think that there are many nodding in agreement with that today. We see it very visibly on our streets. What are you seeing through the Unsheltered campaign and through your eyes in our community when it comes to homelessness?
Well, I can only speak for myself on that. I guess my biggest concern right now is the amount of demand that we're experiencing on services is completely outweighing the supply that we have to offer. We're lacking shelter, we're lacking any type of support, and just trying to figure out how we could better maneuver and maybe facilitate these things to try to get people the most help they can find and what they're looking for in supports.
There's been a lot of talk in the community of late, and in fact, we just talked about it in the last half hour on the show about the Herbs Road encampment by way of example. Some say that's a simple Band-Aid. We should be adopting housing first policies. How do you view the various supports we have, from a Better Tent City to the Herbs Road encampment to our shelter system?
Innovative. I mean, realistically, there's not going to be one solution that fits everybody altogether. So we're going to have multiple pieces in order to be able to meet the needs of everybody in our community. And I mean, in terms of housing first, of course, I support a housing first approach, but realistically, housing takes time. where are people going to live in the meantime? How are they going to survive in the meantime? This isn't about swaying from a housing first approach, but adding a layer of human rights to it to assure that people's well-being is maintained until we can get them spaces of brick and mortar.
Are you concerned with the kinds of conversations that have been happening in municipalities of late, including in nearby Guelph, where there's a new policy around where encampments can even be located?
Well, I've had the pleasure over the last few years of working with Dr. Laura Penn, who I'm presenting with at CAH, and we've been exploring a lot about the municipal protocols throughout the province and the different approaches that municipalities are taking from a codified stance. And I mean, there are some spaces where we're seeing positive progression in the approaches taken, and there's others that it feels like we're taking 10 steps back. My biggest thing that I find in this is we're talking, from my perspective at least, we're speaking about a human rights factor here. People needing to have the ability to be stable and survive, being able to have access to basic needs, infrastructures, and support. So water, bathroom access, trash removal, pest control. But, I mean, really, you cannot implement and navigate facilitating those supports and those aids when you're constantly forcing people to be mobile.
Where you are seeing positive progression, Regan, what does that look like? What is working?
That's a big question, Mike, for a little lady here. I guess I'll go with, after the conference, I'll have a page available with the slides of content that Laura and myself put together about our presentation. So I'm going to draw from there and just give you guys one that I like, and it's a local one. I found, and I think Laura's with me on this, that the anti-hate bylaw that we have locally, I think, was a step in the right direction, in as much as its inclusion of housing and social status as well being included. And kind of bringing a little bit of our policy into recognition of some of the distinct barriers that individuals who don't have a place to live face, and that they will be in our public spaces and should not be discriminated against just for that.
I don't think it's lost on anyone that the title of this conference is on ending homelessness. And I've been around long enough, Regan, to have covered various administrations federally, provincially, even municipally, but I know it's not a problem that can be solved municipally. But for decades, we've been talking about ending homelessness. Do you believe this is something that is possible, that we will have the will to do it?
Well, that's a double-edged sword for me, Mike, because I have to believe that we can. Otherwise, what am I striving for? Realistically speaking, I don't know that we're ever going to find ourselves in a social structure that allows everybody to be living in environments they're completely comfortable in. And, you know, everybody wants a different social structure. But I do think we can do a lot better in terms of including everybody within our community as a whole. And that most of our communities can do that throughout the province as well. And that does include bringing people in from out of the cold in ways that they're comfortable with and into spaces that they can call home.
Regan, I wish you a safe trip to Ottawa, and thank you very much for making time for the show today. I appreciate it.
Anytime, Mike. You have a wonderful day.
You as well. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Regan Sunshine Bruce is part of the Unsheltered campaign here in the region, and she will, along with a professor from Wilfrid Laurier University, you heard Regan mention Laura Penn. They are together en route to Ottawa this week for the National Conference on Ending Homelessness. It's a 4-day conference that begins today. I'll put to you the same question I put to Regan at the end of that conversation, and I recognize it is a big, hairy, audacious question, but we've been talking about it. I've shared with you before covering an event, and it was then Liberal MP Ken Dryden who was spearheading this particular event in Toronto, and it was around ending homelessness in Canada. There was a federal plan introduced, and that takes me back to 1999. So 25 years ago, we were talking then. Dare I say, the problem is as bad, if not worse, than it's ever been today. So the question to you, when we have a conference like this of ending homelessness, can we do that? You tell me what you think on the Mike Farwell Show. This is 570 News Radio and Rogers TV.
to ensure that people's well-being is maintained until we can get them spaces of brick and mortar.
When you start connecting the dots in just that one answer from Regan Bruce, who's a member of the Unsheltered campaign here in Waterloo Region and who will be joining a Wilfrid Laurier University professor and others, many others, at a national conference on ending homelessness this week, you begin to recognize the scope of the problem. And sometimes I worry that it seems so overwhelming that we might throw up our hands and say, there's just not enough that we can do. We certainly seem to have a roll up our sleeves and get to it approach here in the region right now. But based on our first conversation today about the Herbs Road outdoor shelter and how our guest from Wilfrid Laurier University, retired professor of psychology there, Jeffrey Nelson, said it's wrongheaded. It's a Band-Aid. We need to be investing our resources in something like the Paths to Homes that is run through Lutherwood in the community and funded by the region. That's where our resources should be directed. There are so many ideas, so many options available to us. And as Regan Bruce points out, the incredible need right now to do something immediately. Do you think that we can, as this conference in Ottawa this week hopes to do, end homelessness? 519-570-2545, star 570 and 1-800-570-5715. As I've mentioned to you, I remember covering this as an announcement from the federal Liberal government 25 years ago. And here we are today. This is the 2024 National Conference on Ending Homelessness, which suggests to me, if you're putting the date in front of it, if you're date stamping it, well, this is an annual conference. So what are we doing at this annual conference? Are we moving towards that stated goal of ending homelessness? And I think that our guest from Wilfrid Laurier University today, the retired professor from there, Jeffrey Nelson, made a really strong case for directing our resources to something like Paths to Homes here in the region, as an example, and looking at Herbs Road, a better tent city, encampments, the likes of which are on Weber and Victoria right now, as mere Band-Aids. You can certainly see them that way. And then listening to Regan Bruce, I'm thinking, okay, but she's right. We do need something right now because that housing that's required under the Housing First model is not yet built. So it's not as though we can just throw up our hands and say, fend for yourself in the meantime, right? While we get this housing built to create or to move forward on a Housing First approach, you're kind of on your own. And by the way, while you're on your own, we'd rather not see you on the corner of Weber and Victoria. So please go find a place for your encampment that's out of sight and out of our mind. That's obviously not going to work. I do have a concern around our insistence today on finding the sorts of shelter that meet the needs of the individual seeking it. And by that, I mean, if we try to meet every single need, I don't think we're going to be able to ultimately do that. At some point, it might have to be a situation where we say this meets the needs of most, and this is the system that we're going to implement. Because I think if we continually look at this shelter, that shelter, and the other shelter over there, but it doesn't work for person A because of this, person B because of that, person C because of this other thing, I just don't think we can build enough for every individual sensibility here. At some point, we're going to have to determine what fits the most, what makes for the greatest good or the greatest outcome here. Let's go to the phones, hear from you. Mike, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm all right.
I've been contemplating what Professor Nelson had said. I agree with him on the scattershot approach is not working. However, one of the things that concerns me about, you know, just giving them people a home first is I think that some of these people need some treatment. And I think it was very cruel back in the 70s and the 80s when we took these people who were in, I would say, like hospitals and stuff, and threw them out onto the streets. So I believe, yes, we should be giving them a home, but we need to have very good treatment plans for people with mental illnesses and addictions before, as well as just giving people a home. Unless that's there, the addictions and the mental illness will continue. So those are my thoughts, Mike.
All right, Mike, appreciate the call and the thoughts. And remember, the Housing First approach does look at supportive housing, not just, okay, here's your shelter, and we'll figure out the rest sort of thing. The problem, though, is even if we don't look at what we're currently doing with so many different options, from a Better Tent City to Herbs Road to encampments that get services provided, et cetera, it's costing many millions of dollars to do just this. So you want to say, let's just direct them into this one place. There are only so many dollars to go around. And this is an incredibly overwhelming financial burden that we're facing. We let ourselves get here. The question is, do we have the political will or the community will to get us out of it? This is the Mike Farwell Show on 570 News Radio and Rogers TV. You likely heard during All News Mornings today with Christine Clark and Luke Schultz that Food Banks Canada has released its latest hunger count, and it finds that hunger is, quote, spiraling out of control. 2 million visits a month at food banks across this country. We'll talk about the latest numbers in that hunger count. We'll do a deeper dive in about 30 minutes' time, just after the 11 o'clock news this morning. However, following the upcoming update from the 570 News Center, we're going to talk about some spooky stories from right here in our own backyard, because we are into Halloween week, don't you know? I watched a scary movie, a scary-ish movie. I don't know about scary movies anymore. When I was growing up, it was all about the who can outkill who between Freddy Krueger, Michael Myers, Jason Voorhees, right? The Nightmare on Elm Street, Friday the 13th, Halloween, my favorite horror franchise. I was a product of the slasher flicks. I tried watching, and it was called The Quiet Place, was the one I watched last night, which is actually pretty good. I didn't mind it. 'Tis the season after all, right? And I think I'm coming around to the idea that Halloween is my favorite holiday. So we're going to celebrate that as we head towards Halloween on Thursday and, you know, share some things going on around the community and some spooky stories from our own backyard. And we're going to connect together two things, two of my favorite things in the next segment: books full of spooky stories and beer. So stay with us here on the Mike Farwell Show. This is 570 News Radio. Very pleased to have my next guest in studio with me this morning. And I got to say, he said he had some goodies in the bag. And as he took those goodies out of the bag, which included a fine craft beer from Counterpoint in Kitchener, the glass and the beer is ice cold. I mean, I'm not going to advocate drinking at 10:30 in the morning or on the air, but holy Hannah, it's pretty tempting. Mark Leslie is a local author, joins me in studio. Mr. Leslie, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. Thanks for having me here.
Well, thank you very much, not only for making the time to come in, but for bringing such delicious cold gifts and others, with a bunch of books here now that I can get into.
Yeah, of course. I mean, come on, books and beer, Halloween, it's all about treats, right?
Absolutely, yeah. It is, and the treats have come early, and now this might save me from taking one or more of those treats out of the bin when I'm handing out on Thursday night. I'll have this treat instead. The kids can get more.
Exactly.
Of all the many titles that you have held over your lifetime, Book Nerd seems to be one that has stuck, doesn't go away, and you're okay with it. Why?
Oh, yeah, I'm fine with it. I mean, ever since I was a kid, my mom read to me. I read comic books. I read Spider-Man comic books when I was a kid. I was reading early. When I graduated from university, what did I want to do? I wanted to work in the book world. I wanted to be a writer. And so I've worked in the book industry since 1992 as a bookseller through, 35 years of different places, Chapters, Kohl's, online, remember Chapters Online or Chapters Globe, Kobo, all the things, the McMaster University bookstore. So I've worked throughout the industry. While I was writing and publishing books, I was also working in the book industry because I can't think of anything better. Books really connect people in a most meaningful way.
I could not agree more. What is the process like for you as a writer? How do you go about crafting a book?
Well, I get up early in the morning, so 5:30. I'm not the only one who has to get up early for work. And I try to get the writing done early in the morning. So when it comes to writing true ghost story books, there's a lot of research, which usually involves newspaper articles and going to the library, digging into the archives. The archivists are great at local libraries and researching other books. And then when it's fiction, I still do research because it still needs to be realistic, but at least I have the freedom of just making stuff up, taking a premise of whatever it is, and then just running with it. So, yeah, but the whole process itself, it seems like it's just solitary where you're sitting at a desk and typing away. But a lot of things I experience in my day-to-day life when I'm at a coffee shop, when I'm at a great brewery like Counterpoint Brewing, or, I'm listening to conversations around me and I'm picking up on characters and people I see. I'm a big people watcher. So a lot of things that I experience over my lifetime end up getting noted down somewhere in the back of my mind. And sometimes they come out as a character. There may even be, a local radio show host who, does a morning program.
Wait a minute. Okay, do me a favor. If I end up in one of your stories, please let me survive.
Of course, yeah. For sure.
You have developed a penchant for writing spookier stories, yeah. But you're also a self-described chicken. So yes. How do you reconcile that?
Maybe it's therapy. I mean, I've always been afraid of the monster under the bed and the boogeyman, the dark corner of the closet. When my son was little, I couldn't say there's no boogeyman because I was just as terrified as he was. But I think there was something about exploring the darkness and wondering what if there is something in the shadows and then writing about it. I honestly think some of it's therapy. And it also helps to exercise those demons. And the other element of it, I think, is people love to go on roller coasters, even if they're afraid of heights or whatever. And it's that thrill, right? You were talking earlier about watching horror movies. Why do people want to be scared? You get that adrenaline rush. The great thing about a story or a movie is you can close the book and the monster goes away. Or oftentimes, especially in longer novels and movies, the good guys win. Evil does not win. And so with literature and horror, we can control the bad. We can put it away, and then we feel safer. So maybe that's why. I don't know.
When I think back on those horror movies of my youth, Mark, I think back on them really for the way they're described today. They're slasher flicks. They were just ways to... They weren't so much scary as they were gory and watching people get mutilated in all kinds of odd ways. I like a good scare. I really do enjoy a good... A story that instills some level of fear in me, as opposed to a jump scare or watching somebody get chopped up with a machete.
Yeah, that's no fun.
No, I mean, it's not the same, right?
No, and I mean, my stories, for example, my latest book, One Hand Screaming, they're more like, I describe it as the Twilight Zone meets Black Mirror. So it's atmospheric, it's eerie, and some people will read the stories and say, okay, so the first story is The Exquisite Taste of a Book-Aged Skull, and it's about a book collector who wants to read more, so he collects the skulls of avid readers, and when he drinks bourbon out of their skulls, it absorbs the elements of what they've read. So it's atmospheric and creepy, but you don't see murder or blood. It's just, that's weird. Somebody's so obsessed with wanting to read more that that's how they're absorbing. And again, it's based on, beer processing, because again, big beer nerd too.
Sure. So I cannot tell a lie, though, when I hear you talk about a character, whether it's in your book or not, drinking bourbon from someone's skull. That's got some Stephen King undertones to it, my friend.
Oh,
like, not
sure.
Everybody thinks of an eye. Here's what my character's going to do.
Well, I'll take that as a huge compliment.
Well, you should.
But no, a lot of the stories are just more atmospheric, or they follow that what if. So one of my stories is, what if a collector of haunted artifacts put them all in a single room and the ghosts didn't get along because they're now forced, kids sharing a bedroom. They're now fighting. Oh, he's touching me, that kind of stuff.
Right.
So that like it's a dark humor premise, but it's the idea as well, okay, if artifacts can be haunted, what if a collector has them all together? Would the ghosts get along? How would this work? So stuff like that always intrigues me. I just want to see, well, where would this go? How would he deal with the kids that are fighting?
Okay, so you are an author based right here in the region of Waterloo. So yeah. I'll bet, and again, based on your interest in the spookier types of stories, surely, Mark, there are places in this community that in and of themselves are spooky,
yeah.
Right? Okay, maybe you can, you know, fill us in on some of those details. And I want to learn more about this collaboration as well with Counterpoint. So hang on. We're going to keep our conversation with Mark Leslie, the author, going. One Hand Screaming is the latest book, and we'll continue the conversation here on the Mike Farwell Show, 570 News Radio and Rogers TV. In studio this morning with Mark Leslie, an author based in Waterloo. His latest book, One Hand Screaming, comes with a collaboration with Counterpoint Brewing in Kitchener, One Hop Screaming IPA. You had me at IPA, but we'll get into that more in just a moment. You're working on something new right now, Mark, called Weird Waterloo. Perfect timing as we're days away from Halloween. And I've lived around here long enough to have heard at least a few of the ghost stories, if you will, from these here parts. Is there enough fodder for you here?
It's a tough one. I mean, most of the ghost stories from this area I'm finding are located in the Galt area of Cambridge. That's where most of the stories come from. And then trying to get some, I mean, you've got Homer Watson House and you've got some other locations. You've got the Kitchener, the Crystal Skull story. But it really is hard to get some really good ghost stories that can actually fill a chapter. So I've been working on this book with another fellow author, Alyssa Curon. And we've just been gathering our research to try and put it together. But what I really think is we're going to have to include some chapters on the weirdness of Waterloo, not just the ghosts, like weird laws potentially, like you can't tie your horse to a fence post on the left side of the street on Wednesdays or whatever. So digging into those archives and as we were just talking during the break, yeah, the roads too. Like what the heck is it with the roads in Waterloo? And the wandering roads of Waterloo will probably be the name of one of the chapters.
I love it. And it would make perfect sense because this place is weird in a very endearing way.
Oh, of course.
Weird,
yeah,
nonetheless.
We love it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
What is the Crystal Skull story from Kitchener?
So it's this old artifact that comes from overseas, and it was allegedly owned by a woman here in the Kitchener area. Now it looks like the story was disproven, but it's still one of those classic tales. I mean, John Robert Colombo, who's a mentor of mine, who did a lot of ghost stories of Canada, and even wrote the introduction of one of my books. He's talked about it in some of his books as well. So I've had discussions with him about it. And I thought, well, I can't do a book about the Waterloo area without talking about the Crystal Skull and the mystery and the intrigue, right? Whenever there's this coveted artifact that was held right here in town, you've got to dig into it a little bit more.
Absolutely. You mentioned Homer Watson House, which is one of the more famous ghost stories here in the community. And I have it on pretty good authority that it's legit. That place still has spirits wandering the halls. And I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that. But you mentioned the Galt area. So the first thing that comes to mind is the old Fiddler's Green Pub. And you had to remind me the name. I always forgot, but it's Emily's Attic upstairs.
Yeah.
And it haunted. No, yes.
Yeah. Well, it's based on the story of the old postmaster who William Turnbull was his name, who had an affair with an employee there named Emily. He was married, of course, and it is rumored that she may have been pregnant and wanting to reveal to his wife Anna that they were having an affair. And then she was found hung, whether she was murdered, whether it was suicide, hung in the rafters. So there's often mysterious noises, the wailing that you hear from Emily from up in the building, sometimes the shadowy figures seen heading up to the clock tower, even staff when it was a pub reporting bottles being indiscriminately just kind of tossed when no one's around and being misplaced and moved around and things like that. So that's an intriguing story. And even the building itself, post office to restaurant to pub to library or idea exchange as well, which is great. Great place to go do some research, right?
It certainly is. And they've actually got the light show running right now. We've seen it over the holidays before, and it's doing a nice Halloween theme right now in the downtown Galt area. So it's beautiful. Speaking of beautiful buildings, Galt Collegiate Institute, or GCI, one of my favorites in the entire region. Surely to goodness, Mark.
For sure.
There are former students, or probably a nasty principal, like something haunting is going on over there, isn't there?
Yeah, well, I mean, Taft, so the original owner, was against women being at the college. And when the first female principal showed up, that's when a lot of stuff started to happen. And the wonder was, is Taft kind of getting upset that you've got a woman in charge of the school? But the custodians have reported eerie things, such as doors and windows and curtains open and closing when no one's around. Feeling a hand, an invisible hand on your shoulder when you're by yourself. Or even one of the ones that intrigued me a lot was walking at night with the light behind you and down the hallway and seeing a second shadow beside you when there's nobody there.
Okay.
And
now.
So Galt Collegiate, I think, is one of the creepiest and a beautiful, I mean, historic landmark. It was founded in 1852, I believe, and it's got quite a rich history. And it's a gorgeous building, too.
I literally just got a chill when you talked about that second shadow. I'm not even kidding. I'm not even kidding. You mentioned the crystal skull story in Kitchener, disproven, but a great story nonetheless. Yeah. As you do work like this, and you're working on Weird Waterloo and others, I know you've Hamilton, other places, you've done these sorts of stories. How open is your mind, Mark, to the idea that there are spirits among us?
I am, like I said, I'm a big chicken. I am afraid I might see ghosts. So I'm very open, but I'm also skeptical in terms of when I research a story, I try to take a journalistic approach. And if it can be disproven by physics or something, for example, in my book, Tomes of Terror, Haunted Bookstores and Libraries, when the staff say, well, and the books fell off the shelf all on their own. I said, well, was it summer? He's like, yeah, well, okay, humidity gets into the paper, the books expand, they fall off the shelf. That's basic physics. That's not a ghost. But when the pile of ghost books, a ghost bumps books, you know, somebody walks through the kids section and everything's fine and they come back out of the staff room less than a minute later and they're all stacked up perfectly even in the middle of the floor and there's no possible way somebody could have gotten in, piled them up that quickly, you're thinking, well, that's unexplainable. But books falling off a shelf, come on, that's just basic physics.
I love it. I love it. How did the collaboration with Counterpoint come about? I love Graham over there. He's done collaborations with me for Farwell for Hire in the past. I love the idea of One Hop Screaming. How did this happen?
Well, I'm a huge craft beer fan, and I've been a fan of Counterpoint since they opened. And one of the things I particularly loved about them is it's a small, you know, family kind of brewery. And they do a lot of community stuff, obviously stuff with you and with other, they're very community-minded. And they had done some book events. So I approached Graham and said, well, I'm a big fan of the IPAs you've done over the years, and I'd love to do a bitter one, and here's my idea. And he loved the thought. So we got to do the collaboration beer, and I mean, the beer was brewed. It was released earlier this month, and I even wrote a story. A beer story that comes for free. You scan it on the barcode or on the coasters, and it's called As One Hop Screams. And it's one of those creep show kind of murder, revenge murder stories. And so Graham's a character, and he's one of the regulars who comes to the bar. And Ben, who is the manager over at Arabella Park Beer Bar, Ben said, could I be the murderer? I was all right, so Ben's the murderer. And what I did is I had a lot of fun including the names of people I've had beers with, just like little Easter eggs, servers and bartenders and brewmasters and stuff. And I just included all their names in the story just for fun.
I love it. I love it. So on Thursday night, Mark, when I open my One Hop Screaming IPA and my copy of One Hand Screaming, your book, does the beer complement what's on the pages?
I think so. I think it's very memorable flavor. It's still strong. It's funny. Graham had said that it'll settle down. The bitterness will start to mellow down towards as it sits for a while. And I had one last night and was like, no, it's still got a really nice, really nice juicy hoppy bitter flavor. And I'm thrilled because on tomorrow night on the 29th we're doing a special celebration at Arabella Beer Park. It's books, booze, and beers. It's going to be Halloween trivia, some door prizes, and a bit of a reading, and obviously a tasting and talk about the beer. Because, I mean, I love books and I love beer, and I'm so happy I got to do this special collaboration.
I love it, and I'm so happy to meet a fellow book and beer lover that we can have this conversation and talk about One Hop Screaming at Counterpoint and One Hand Screaming your latest book. Where can we get our hands on your work?
Well, I know Wordsworth Books has signed copies. I know the two of the Indigos at Conestoga Mall and in Cambridge have signed copies as well. But you can order it online. Anyway, just search for One Hand Screaming Mark Leslie, or I mean, come on out to the event tomorrow night and I'll personally sign the copies for people.
Listen, you could do a whole lot worse than an event where Mark will be there. There will be a little bit of a reading. You can get a signed copy of a book. And oh yeah, if you're at Arabella Park, you can have a beverage as well.
You might as well enjoy all their fine beers.
Why not? Why not? Love it. Thanks very much for making time and coming in today.
Thanks for having me here, Mike.
Mark Leslie is the author of One Hand Screaming and so much more. Latest collaboration with Counterpoint Brewing. One Hop Screaming IPA to go along with One Hand Screaming, Mark Leslie's most recent book. This is the Mike Farwell Show on 570 News Radio and Rogers TV. According to the latest hunger count from Food Banks Canada, we have reached as a country grim new milestones. What does that look like? Well, in at least one case, how about 2 million visits a month to food banks across this country? We'll dive into the data that's been released in the latest hunger count from Food Banks Canada coming up right after this update from the 570 News Center. This is the Mike Farwell Show, 570 News Radio and Rogers TV. As you heard during All News Mornings today with Christine Clark and Luke Schultz, latest numbers in the hunger count from Food Banks Canada are out, and they paint a pretty grim picture. Let's learn more about this from the research director at Food Banks Canada. Richard Mattern joins the show. Richard, good morning.
Good morning.
What are these latest numbers telling you?
Well, it's telling us that the system is reaching its capacity. It's buckling under the strain. We haven't seen this rate of increase ever, and this is a historic high, over 2 million visits in 1 month. And that's almost double than it was before the pandemic. So it's telling us it's reinforcing the urgent need for reform, which is driving people to use food banks. And it's a reminder that there's only so much capacity food banks have, and that's why we need urgent action.
I can only imagine the strain on those food banks, and I'll come back to that in a moment, but you mentioned the urgent need for reform here as well. What does reform look like?
Well, we're asking for a dual path to reform here. So right now we have these longer-term commitments from the federal government, including affordable housing, so we need to keep on that path, addressing the affordable housing crisis and other changes to our income security system. But in the short term, we need immediate support with a groceries and essentials benefit. And this is a modified version of a GST credit, which is delivering more money to low-income households so they can better afford food in the month.
What is driving this incredible demand at food banks?
Well, it's a couple things. Right now, the main thing is the affordability crisis. So households in Canada are basically dealing with a 1-2 punch of housing and food costs, and that is taking up most of their budget. And it's after a few years of contending with these high rates of inflation, there's less room. There's less room for error. There's less room for emergencies, which inevitably happen with every household. So when other needs do come up, including families with children and child-related needs, food is what is being sacrificed. So there's that, and then this recent uptick in unemployment rates, and what's happening there is many people, despite being unemployed, are not able to access EI, which is one of the key things people should have at their disposal when they lose work. So that's another reform we're calling for, is updating our EI system to meet the realities of our modern labor market.
You mentioned, Richard, these families with children who find themselves in need of food support. Do you track by demographic who is showing up and what these numbers are telling us about individuals or families?
We sure do. So what we what we've been seeing in the last couple years in particular is an increase in households with children accessing food banks. The single unattached person is still the main household demographic for various reasons, including very low provincial social assistance rates. But what families of children are contending with, and this is reflective in other data being released by Stats Can, is they're having an especially hard time managing the rising inflation for reasons I mentioned. It's because there's needs that come up for the household, child-related needs, child care, which has been hard for many clients to find to accommodate these varied work schedules. So that is an increasing demographic we've been seeing more of, and it's specifically tied into the inflation issue.
On the support side of this equation, Richard, and you mentioned it earlier, how are our food banks withstanding or absorbing this incredible strain?
Well, food banks across the network are doing an outstanding job in trying to meet the need as best they can. Inevitably, however, there's compromises that have to be made. So, you know, many have had to reduce the amount of food they give out per visit. They've had to cut back on some of the sizes of the hampers that are given out. They maybe serve less frequently, so their inventory lasts longer. Unfortunately, you know, we're hearing up to a third, up 30% almost, are running out of food before demand is met. And what that's telling us is the numbers this year are reflective, perhaps, more of the capacity of the food banks to meet the need, existing need, rather than the full need that exists. And that's a very frightening prospect.
Where do we go from here? The numbers, the data being shared today, we're able to have conversations like this one, Richard. You talk about that urgent need for reform and what reform can look like. But how do we get this in front of the right audience? Is there a possibility here of us moving forward and getting some meaningful change here?
Well, as you had mentioned, talking about it is a huge step, and making sure that the public is aware, because often when the public demands change, the governments will follow. So I would encourage people to contact their MPs and read our report online, look at our recommendations, ask their MPs what their party is advocating for and what they're going to do to address these issues. And if they can, help out at their local food bank with either their time, their volunteering foods, or funds if they can. But ultimately, it's raising awareness of the issue and getting the public behind it.
Richard, I appreciate your time on the show today. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
Richard Mattern is a research director with Food Banks Canada. The latest hunger count shows we have reached grim new milestones when it comes to the need for food support. 2 million visits in a month, and you look at some of those numbers within the numbers, it's a 90% increase compared to March of 2019. So in 5 years, we have virtually doubled the number of monthly visits to food banks across this country. Food inflation and the cost of housing is the 1-2 punch that's really hitting hardest those living on low incomes. And 1/3 of food bank clients are children. Further, 1 in 5, 18%, are employed. I've mentioned this many times before, and I remember the first time I encountered the phrase working poor, whereby you have a job, but the income from that job is not sufficient enough for you to meet all of those basic needs, right? Your shelter, your electricity, the heat. Oh, yeah, and by the way, let's get some food into that budget as well. So people, even while working, end up going to a place like a food bank to get that food security or that food support. So a 90% increase compared to 5 years ago, and the calls now for urgent reform. One of the things that pops into my head when I hear Richard talk about income supplements, GST rebates, things like that, I wonder if this isn't one of the arguments that could be made for a universal basic income and what you would think of the idea of implementing such a financial assistance program in this country. Are you open to the idea everybody gets a base amount so they can meet their basic needs? I mean, I know it's really simplistic to say, but in a country like Canada, with the wealth of this nation, should anybody be without housing or without food, that we need to rely on food banks? Remember, decades ago, they too, much like income tax, were just a temporary measure. food banks were just a little Band-Aid to get us over the hump. And now here we are, 2 million visits a month. Would you support the idea of a universal basic income as a means of supporting people trying to make ends meet today? This is the Mike Farwell Show. Interested in your opinion, as always, 570 News Radio and Rogers TV.
Right now, the main thing is the affordability crisis. So households in Canada are basically dealing with a 1-2 punch of housing and food costs, and that is taking up most of their budgets. And after a few years of contending with these high rates of inflation, there's less room for error. There's less room for emergencies, which inevitably happen with every household.
Richard Mattern is a research director with Food Banks Canada, joins us this morning to talk about the latest hunger count, which I'm sure will not come as a surprise to you. It contains no good news whatsoever when you consider 2 million visits to food banks across the 5,100 food bank network with Food Banks Canada in the month of March this year. That's a 90% increase. So it's essentially doubled since March of 2019. And I'll remind you again that food banks, when the idea was first born decades ago, were meant to be a temporary measure to ease a food security problem. And here we are all these decades later, and the problem, sadly, is only getting worse. It makes me wonder, when we talk about the reforms that are necessary and what Food Banks Canada is asking for here, to create a Canada where no one is left behind, no one goes hungry, what Food Banks Canada is asking for is a dual approach to address the root causes of food bank use by addressing low incomes and poverty and the skyrocketing costs of living. So what if, in order to address those low incomes and poverty, we were to adopt in this country a universal basic income? Do you think that would be a means to an end of food insecurity? 519-570-2545, star 570, 1-800-570-5715. I know the idea of a universal basic income is not universally, if you'll forgive the pun, popular. And I get that. There is a notion that if everyone were provided this base level that they receive without going to work, then it would be a disincentive to getting off one's couch and video game playing time, right? I understand that sentiment. But we have seen, albeit in small sample sizes, however, we have seen that where a universal basic income is implemented, what actually happens is people have the ability, flexibility, if you will, to upgrade their skills, to upgrade their education. They hold down jobs, and then because they're not worried constantly or on the treadmill of job to job to job, they're able to upgrade themselves so that they can earn more, contribute more, etc. down the road. We're seeing those signs in, again, limited sample sizes, but nonetheless, it exists. The other idea around a universal basic income is that you take all of these various supports that are provided within communities, within countries, and you wrap them all into the universal basic income basket. So you're not providing this social assistance safety net or that social assistance safety net and the administration that goes along with it. Instead, you are administering one universal basic income program. And I'm like you, I'm very skeptical of the savings derived from the elimination of bureaucracy. I don't think we tend to land there the way that we should. But just consider this for a moment. And you may recall from the last budget cycle here in the region of Waterloo, where our food bank of Waterloo region received a $1.5 million grant of funding, which was about double what the food bank usually gets. Now, that's one-time funding up to $1.5 million, but the $744,000 is there annually. What if, and I'm not trying to take away from the work done at our food banks in this community, but what if our regional government wasn't supporting the Food Bank of Waterloo Region to the tune of $750,000, or in the case of this year, $1.5 million, because we had a universal basic income, which eliminates the need for food assistance in this community or elsewhere. I don't think there is any one-size-fits-all solution. I don't think there's any magic wand we can wave to make these things go away. But as we say so often when we're talking about issues on this show, what we have been doing does not seem to be working. Food banks were to be a temporary measure all those decades ago, and here we are seeing skyrocketing need, including children at food banks across this country. On the first Monday of every month, so next Monday, the 4th, will be our opportunity to chat with Kim Wilhelm, who's the CEO at the Food Bank of Waterloo Region, and we'll find out what the numbers are looking like here based on this hunger count and where things are at with food security here in this region. We try to keep our ears and eyes on that with the monthly segment with the Food Bank of Waterloo Region so we can keep you apprised of how people are doing in this community and where those donations like you just made through the annual Uncle Hans food drive, for example, where those donations are going and what impact that they are having. Because we always see the region stepping up, right? We look out for one another around here. But when I look at the overall numbers and the increasing need year over year, month over month, it makes me wonder if we don't need to be thinking about bolder approaches. This is the Mike Farwell Show on 570 News Radio and Rogers TV. Just going back about an hour to our conversation with author Mark Leslie, who, among other books, has just released One Hand Screaming, sort of an anniversary of 20 years of writing stories about haunted places. One Hand Screaming comes along with a collaboration at one of our local craft brewers, Counterpoint, called One Hop Screaming, just in time for Halloween, don't you know? And Mark is currently working on a new book called Weird Waterloo that looks into some of the ghost stories around these here parts, including the alleged hauntings of what is now the Idea Exchange Post Office in Galt Collegiate Institute, and who could forget Emily's Attic, Fiddler's Green Irish Pub. Sean sends an email to Mike at 570news.com. He says that's why they call the Galt Collegiate Institute teams the ghosts. The name comes from the reputed ghost sightings. And Mark's email to Mike at 570news.com. In agreement with me, something I said when talking to Mark is that the horror movies, if you will, that I grew up with in the 1980s, they were like what we refer to now as slasher flicks. And I think they earned that title very well. Not so much scary as they were gory. And Mark agrees with that assessment. But then he wonders, have you ever seen the movie Salem's Lot? The original with David Soul, not the remake. The remake got a touch of a Hollywood ending. But there's a scene in the original with David Soul that absolutely freaked Mark out. Kind of like me and The Exorcist. It's not when Linda Blair's head goes twisting around. No, 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 no. It's the so-called spider walk when she came down those stairs. It still gives me the creeps. It's Halloween week here on the show, and we'll have some time to talk about the paranormal and our own little favorite ghost stories slash horror movies in the days ahead. I promise you that. Right now, I have to get you to the 570 News Center for an update. And then this being Monday, don't you know, David Drew will be here to share his views with us on Drew's Views. That's coming up on the Mike Farwell Show, 570 News Radio and Rogers TV.
Always chewed on a toothpick or a long blade of grass, drank from the bottle, rolled the worst cigarettes, was impervious to insect bites. It's one of the best damn tree planting highballers east of Prince George.
Yep, that's our friend, Crazy Dave. David Drew is the owner of Negotiating Change, Government Relations, Stakeholder Engagement Strategies. He's not really Crazy Dave, but Scott Wicken is an excellent artist, and we use his words to welcome David Drew to the studio each and every Monday. I'm so glad you're here because you can talk about the story that has frankly bored me to tears. I feel in part, not that you're going to be boring when you talk about it, but I feel in part like we've been played here by the caucus, the federal liberal caucus that simply wants to be talked about. They want to be on the front page. I don't know. Like, what really happened? Oh, we're upset with our leadership. Here's a strongly worded letter. Please, come on. Help me, David. Help me, please.
The letter did feel a little bit like the campus cops back in the days when we went to school. You know, it's like, resign or we'll ask you to resign again.
Exactly.
But let's take a couple bits of it apart. Okay. The idea that the names weren't released. Everybody's talking about that as cowardice. And there's a good chance of that. But I also was thinking that's possibly for the team. If I was one of those ones who was a team player who genuinely believed the leader has to go, and I attach my name to that and it gets released, I'm going to be getting questions from the media. And I might put my lips might get a little bit ahead of where I want to be. I might say something at that point that makes keeping the team together a lot harder.
Yeah, but you don't want the team together.
Well, no, you want the team together. You believe in the Liberal Party. You just think Trudeau's got to go. Now, this is the weirdest part about it, too, though. Like, some of them have said, okay, it's already over. We voiced our grievances. Festivus has ended. But not all of them, by any means at all. So you're left wondering, is this over? I don't think it is.
Come on. Look, this whole thing is, it's the most ridiculous thing, David. If you're an MP, you are elected to the highest level of office in this country, and you're afraid of answering questions from the media because you attached your name to a letter? Like, who are these people? It's ridiculous.
I was just putting it down that it might be something other than cowardice.
I get that.
But yeah, let's get back to the whole idea of resign or else.
Or else what?
Or actually, you know, it was like, take some time to think about this. Like, you know, you've got this deadline, and it's like, I'm sorry, Liberal Caucus, you're not Nancy Pelosi. Because that's the sort of what it felt like. You know, Joe Biden's like, I've decided I'm running for president. And Nancy Pelosi's like, well, he's got to make his decision soon. Justin Trudeau's like, I'm running for leader. And these guys are like, take some time to think about it. Make a decision soon. But they're not there. So what is the worst case scenario? Independent liberals. I mean, a lot of these people are not running again already. So they could just say, I'm sitting as an independent.
Well, and that's
you cannot count on my vote.
But that's one of the other things about this, then. So many are not running again anyway. It's like adding another flame or putting more kerosene on the fire that's on the bridge behind you.
But just because you're not running again doesn't mean you don't care. I mean, I know candidates who never got into office who are more partisan than if they would have been in there just because they feel like they were so close. You know what I mean? Just because you are no longer elected doesn't mean the motivations that got you there are gone too. So whatever made you a liberal in 2015, boy, you're yearning for that to come back, eh?
Electoral reform, that's what made me a liberal in 2015, I'll tell you.
I was in it for the pot.
Well, I hope you enjoyed the beginning of the show then today when we played Afro Man as our opening song, because it was on this day in 2001 that it was a number one hit.
I'm so old.
We both are, David. We both are. All right. I really believe, so you can go with the, and your premise is sound, I'll grant you, that it's not cowardice, it's just not wanting to say things that might bring more disunity to the team. But for me, this is a play beyond all plays. Pierre Poilievre's getting all of the headlines, and they're like, we need to get somebody talking about the Liberal Party, here's what we're going to do.
Well, actually, Pierre Poilievre's been getting next to no headlines. He's just been sitting there and watching. No, you know, wow, your opponents are shooting themselves in the foot.
I guess. I'm getting daily releases from the federal conservatives, including this morning's about the elimination of GST.
Oh, we'll get houses. There.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, we'll get there.
All right. Well, let's talk about 10 years ago on Parliament Hill. Tell us the story, David.
It was the weirdest, most stressful day of my life, and I was in the safest position ever. It was caucus morning, so all the MPs are huddled in meetings in Center Block back when that was a building. And all of a sudden, there's these headlines popping across Twitter about there being a shooting at the War Memorial. And then there was talk about a shooter approaching Parliament Hill. And two longtime staffers on the floor, on my floor of the Justice Building, just were putting on their coats and walking out the door. And I'm like, where are you going? They're like, I know what's coming next. I know what's coming next. I didn't know what was coming next. But yeah, they locked us down. We had a very nice security guard come to our door. And they said, we'd like you to stay in your offices. If you are wandering the hallways, you know, you're going to be challenged. If you want to go to somebody else's office just to be with your friends, that's okay. If you use the stairs, you may be challenged. If you use the elevators, be prepared for guns to greet you. There is no elevator use going on right now. And so, you know, we're sitting there with our TVs in the offices trying to figure out what's going on. And there was a shooting on Parliament Hill. A gunman had left the War Memorial, commandeered a car on the hill, one of the minister drivers who was just waiting, took it from East Block to Center Block, and then started to storm the hill. MPs were in their caucus meetings on Center Block, and you could walk through Center Block afterwards and see bullet holes in chairs, bullet holes in the doors. It was for real. And the MPs in the caucus meetings at first thought, like, you know, there was construction going on. They thought something had fallen. So we're in this office, though. There's me and our Ukrainian intern. And she's like, this doesn't happen very often in Canada, does it? I'm like, nope, first time for me. But we're trying to figure out what's going on. And I have another staff member who is coming in late that morning because she had a class at U of O. And she's calling the office, freaking out because she can't find a way to get in. She can't get across the police cordon to get to our office. And I'm like, Carly, like, go home, get indoors. And she's like, some police officer just told me there's snipers on the roofs. A police officer told her that. You know what I mean? Like, that was not gossip. That was not anything. You're looking at the news and you're hearing shots at the Rideau Center, gunfire in the market. You're hearing about, yes, snipers on roofs being reported, multiple sightings. So all of this started around 10:30 in the morning, and it was about 7 o'clock at night that they lifted the lockdown and we were allowed to go home.
Holy cow. So you must have been jealous of your two colleagues that said, we know what's coming, and got the hell out.
Exactly. Yeah. All of a sudden I understood, but it was also so weird because BlackBerries worked. The pins on BlackBerries work, but the cellular network was down. One friend from Sudbury actually just had the brains to call my landline. Hey, Drew, what's going on? Are you still alive? But yeah, everybody who was using cells, so we were putting out messages on Facebook on Harold's behalf, just saying, Harold is fine. Everybody he's with is fine. It's hard to communicate right now, but we'll do our best to keep you in the loop. But there were people, like MPs in that building. The caucus rooms have bathrooms as anterooms, so they were okay. But if you were someone getting ready to present the caucus, you might have been four rooms over with no access to a bathroom, and you were locked there for 8-9 hours. It was just this weird day because you show up the next day and you realize, no, it was just that one guy. But for most of the day yesterday, you were sitting there closing the curtains, making sure my wife was at a meeting at a hotel in downtown Ottawa. And I'm just like, go to the bar. Put down the credit card. Don't go anywhere. Just be happy. Like, so yeah, it was the weirdest day in the world because I was perfectly safe. I was perfectly bored. I was very afraid for no particular reason. But yeah, so much stress. And then it's just over with. And reporters are trying to, so what would you like to say? Just like, go away, go away, go away.
You always say that to reporters.
No.
Darn, like, conservatives.
Honestly, at that point, what am I going to say? Yeah, I had a rough day in my office watching you guys on the news. Like, I had nothing profound to say. But, you know, we lost a reservist that day.
We certainly did.
Some of the Parliament Hill Protective Security were injured. Kevin Vickers did the whole Die Hard Christmas movie shooting scene, you know, diving to the side. And then the next day, for about a week, you could not get onto the green space on Parliament Hill, and we weren't sure if it was ever going to open again. Yeah, it was just a weird, weird day, but I just realized it had been 10 years while I was in Ottawa last week, and thought, yeah, that's worth talking about, even though it's really embarrassingly little story I have to tell.
I don't know how embarrassing little that is. That's an anniversary to remember for sure. David Drew in studio with us. He joins us every Monday morning at 11:30 with Drew's Views here on the Mike Farwell Show, 570 News Radio and Rogers TV. Every Monday morning at 11:30, David Drew, who owns Negotiating Change, which is a business that provides you government relations and stakeholder engagement strategies. He knows a thing or two about those things. And he joins us every Monday morning to share his views with us on a segment called Drew's Views. David, a longtime conservative staffer, and just shared, before that commercial break, his recollections of 10 years ago on Parliament Hill when he was locked down in his office working for Harold Albrecht, the former Kitchener-Conestoga MP at the time. And of course, that was the time that Nathan Cirillo, our reservist, was shot at the war memorial. And then the gunman made his way to Parliament Hill. On to more issues of the day, David Drew, and the big issues of the day. One of them, a bit of a reversal of policy for the feds on immigration. And then, of course, we still need to build houses and lots of them.
I am so tired of talking about immigration. Pardon me. I'm not tired of talking about it. Like, we have good conversations about it, but I'm tired of politicians talking about it. Mm. The number that the Liberals are cutting down to is perfectly fine by me. I have no idea if the number is too high or too low, but a month ago that would have been a racist number. And that's the problem I'm having with this government and immigration. It seems like anything lower then their number is racist and un-Canadian. And anything higher would be unreasonable to the economy. There's just, it's not a math test for them. It's a virtue test. And they talk about, well, it's not like we're going back to the Stephen Harper years. Stephen Harper increased immigration every year he was prime minister. The difference between him and now is he didn't have a goal to get us to a million people by 2050, was it, or...
100 million by the end of the century.
Yeah, 100 million by the end of the century, yes. Yeah. And that's quite the goal for Canada. So that requires a lot higher immigration. But, you know, it wasn't that long ago. Pierre Trudeau, while he was prime minister, would cut immigration targets while we were going through periods of economic decline, recessions, because there were no jobs for the people to pick up. It was not a goal about how many can we squeeze through the doors in a year. It was a goal about how many can we successfully integrate to become successful.
You mean it almost made Canadian. Sense?
Well, yes.
It seems like a sensible approach, doesn't it?
It really, really does. And the idea now that anything that is a cut is anything but a statement on your belief in multiculturalism is offensive. Like, the idea that we have, and I've harped on this before with the Friday Forum with you, but refugees coming to this country to sleep on the streets. I think that's a really good reason to slow down on our refugee program, because I find it embarrassing as a Canadian that we are saying, welcome to this country, there's your sidewalk. I that's not an expression of me being anti-immigrant. It's an expression of me saying, like, they deserve better. If we are going to be making commitments to people, we should have them in. But now the Liberals have put some very significant cuts forward. And between this and the temporary resident cuts through students and temporary foreign workers, these are some big cuts that will eventually resonate through the system. We don't know how quickly. We don't know how long it will actually take to have an impact on rent, on services. But boy, oh boy, it is a 180-degree turn from where we were 6 months ago. And then on the other side, as you alluded to earlier, we have Pierre Poilievre with his latest announcement on housing. And that is to eliminate the HST, or the federal portion at least, on homes for that sell for under $1 million. And as really bad ideas go, this is a pretty good one.
It's a pretty good bad idea?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it has the same fundamental problem that every solution has that doesn't involve building more houses. Without more supply, it's still the same amount of competition out there. But the one difference between this, say, and a savings program is that $1 million cap. If your house, like, you can't compete the prices up beyond $1 million on this program, because then all the incentive goes away. So it might push the house housing price up on the $700,000 and $800,000 house. But that $995,000 house is not going to go for $1.1 million because of the inflation caused by this program. So honestly, like, it's a bad idea in that it's really just jiggling chairs on the Titanic. We're not building more houses, but it's not as inflationary as most of the other really, really bad ideas that have come forward in housing. Make sense?
I do. It does make sense, surprisingly. Yeah, it's a very good, bad idea. And what I'm also taking away, much like I love your point on the immigration file being a virtue test as opposed to an immigration test, but the idea here that what we really need is supply, supply, supply when it comes to housing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's been reinforced so much, but like, as much as the federal government took the beating on this and Justin Trudeau took the beating for saying it wasn't his job, it really is neat when you look at the differences from city to city, and I almost want to say we should get rid of all municipalities.
Excuse me?
Get rid of them. Just for 5 or 10 years. And then start over from scratch. Because it's really hard to get NIMBYism going provincially. It's really easy to get it going locally. And if we as a province are going to meet our goals for population growth, we can't trust it to the cities. And I look at our cities in Waterloo region a little bit, but I'm sorry, I've said this a million times, we can do everything perfectly. We can build double the number of houses we need. But if Toronto doesn't get it right, we're peeing in the wind.
Something for us to consider before your return next Monday. Always good to see you, sir. Thanks for being here.
Left it on a happy note.
Yep, just go pee into the wind, and that's peeing towards Toronto. David Drew joins us every Monday morning, 11:30, for Drew's Views here on the Mike Farwell Show. This is 570 News Radio and Rogers TV. Just like that, three quarters of the show has expired on us. But don't you worry, the most important hour of all is the next hour. That is when we open the phone lines so you can have your voice heard here on the show. How was your weekend? Anything chafing at your chaps today, stuck in your craw? You want to rant about something because you're upset about it? You want to rave about something because you're happy about it, even on a Monday? It is a pretty nice sunny day. Whatever it is, a rant or a rave, you can share it with us during the next hour of Open Line Radio here on the program. Our friends at Rogers TV Cable 20 are done for another day as well. So thanks to the entire team of staff and volunteers at Rogers TV Cable 20 for producing the TV side of this show as they do from 10 until noon every day. I'm going to get you an update from the 570 News Center and then open the phone lines for the Talkback Hour. It's Rant or Rave on the Mike Farwell Show, 570 News Radio. And so long, Rogers TV.
Take out the papers and the trash. Or you don't get no spending cash. If you don't scrub that kitchen floor, you ain't going to rock and roll no more.
Don't talk back.
Just finish cleaning up your room. Let's see that dust fly with that broom. Get all that garbage out of sight. Or you don't go out Friday night. Yaggity yak.
Don't talk back.
And so shall we begin the rant or rave edition of your 12 o'clock talk back hour. 519-570-2545. Star 570 and 1-800-570-5715. Remember, if you can't get through on one line, try one of the other ones, because as they get filled up, one of those lines might already be jammed, but you can try another one of them and get through that way. Love to hear from you during this segment every day. Your chance to have your voice heard. We're going to start with Dave. Good afternoon, Dave.
Good afternoon, Mike. I would like to congratulate the Kitchener Rangers for now being in not only second place in the Western Conference, but second overall in the OHL.
Yes, they are, sir.
And I'll hang up and listen to the rest of the show.
All right, Dave, thank you very much. What a great way to start the talk back hour. Right to the point, and congratulations are definitely in order. Look, it's early still in the season. But, you know, after playing 13 games now, the Kitchener Rangers are quickly approaching the quarter pole. 17 games marks one quarter of the season done. And the Kitchener Rangers will play game number 14 tomorrow against Sarnia, game number 15 on Friday against Sudbury, and game number 16 on Sunday against Saginaw. All of those games at the Kitchener Memorial Auditorium. So basically, by the end of this week's play, the Rangers will be about one quarter of the way through the season. And as Dave points out, they are currently second overall in the Ontario Hockey League. They have gone 11 games, 11, without a regulation loss. 9 regulation wins and a loss. Well, 9 wins, because the win on the weekend came in overtime. But 9 wins and a shootout loss with an overtime loss. The team is playing incredibly well. The team is playing above expectation. Will it last all season? Will they finish the season in second place overall in the Ontario Hockey League? I don't know. It's probably unlikely, but this team has got me believing all kinds of things it might be capable of. So, Dave, again, an excellent call, right to the point, with some very deserving congratulations for our Kitchener Rangers. And hey, if you're not already behind them, it might not be a bad time to hop on board the bandwagon, baby. We got some room for you. Grant, good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon. And Justin Button, no, he should be dressed for tomorrow's game.
Oh, you're fired up about that head-checking penalty, aren't you?
And you said it wasn't a head-check, and same as Hocus Pocus said, it wasn't. It was a shoulder. So he should be allowed to play, and if the league doesn't like it, tough beans.
Well, unfortunately, Grant, you know that the league gets the last say on this, but I think you're right on this one. Justin Botineau was given a 5-minute major penalty for checking to the head and a game misconduct on Saturday. I think the referees got this one wrong.
And it sounded like from you that he was so happy. He was calling almost anything that, yeah. And I clearly think last year when London scored that attempt, I think that should not have been called.
Wait, now, last year against London, what play are you talking about? I can't even remember.
I can't remember. But
oh, okay, but it was London and they did it last year.
And it was an attempt.
Attempt of what?
Of scoring. It went into review, and I can't remember what the reasoning was. I still think refs are being paid off by other teams.
Well, that's not happening, Grant. Come on now.
Well, I think it
is. No, it's not. Stop it.
Nope.
Yeah.
If I'm the London coach, I'm going to confess and say no.
I'm sorry. I can't entertain that too far. I agree completely that Justin Botineau should not be suspended for his hit on Nick Holomigo on Saturday night. It was not a check to the head, in my opinion. I didn't get a chance to look at it in slow motion on the iPad like the referees did, but I think they got this one wrong. So I'm fairly confident that Justin Botineau will be playing tomorrow night. Jack Labrash, that's a bit of a different story. His shot looked more like a shot to the head. That might just bring the subsequent game or two, I think two-game suspension. We'll see what happens, but Grant is right about Justin Botineau not deserving a suspension. Grant is wrong that teams are paying off the officials. Look, they're hard-working men and women in this league, okay? They don't always get it right, and I understand that. They don't always get it right in every sport. You understand that too, right? But nobody is paying off the officials in the Ontario Hockey League. I cannot allow that narrative to stand. My apologies if that's the narrative you wanted to deliver today. I will not stand for it, I tell you. Not on this show. We'll take a break. We'll come back with more of your 12 o'clock talkback hour, rant or rave edition. This is the Mike Farwell Show, 570 News Radio. Every day from noon until 1, we offer you this opportunity to be a part of the show. Let's hear what's on your mind. 519-570-2545, star 570, and 1-800-570-5715, your rant or rave edition of the 12 o'clock talkback hour. Toll-free Jay, my man, you got a rant? You got a rave? What's up?
I just wanted to wish you luck for tonight.
Okay, what do I need luck for? Do you know what I'm doing tonight?
Pittsburgh and the Giants.
Oh. Thank you.
And also, I wanted to...
Hang on a second, sorry. I'm so sorry for interrupting, but why do we need luck? The Giants are terrible, aren't they?
Well...
Yeah.
They're the Maple Leafs, but we keep going.
Wow. Okay. Okay, Jay, that's a little chin music right there, let me tell you.
I did actually, you know what, truthfully, we are very fortunate that the gentleman from the Dodgers didn't get this badly injured.
Oh, can you stop with, you know, what is a subluxation anyway? And if you're in the major leagues and you don't know how to properly slide, that's a you problem, not a me problem. All this nonsense about Shohei's shoulder, give me a break.
Shoulders happen.
Shoulders happen, yeah. So does other stuff that starts with SH.
See what I did there?
I do, yeah.
Was that impressive?
It was not bad.
Actually, I also want to praise Mr. Snow.
I'm very Mr. Grateful. Snow. Oh, Rob Snow. I thought, okay, yeah, of course.
I'm very grateful that you guys have him on because it really helps to have more insight from a broader, like a larger perspective of the nation. Like, is he in Ottawa? Is it across Canada or just in Ontario?
No, he's in Ottawa and broadcasts to Vancouver, Calgary, Ottawa, here in Waterloo Region, and Halifax.
He does a really good job.
Yes, he does.
He and I had a very nice conversation the other day.
Glad to hear that.
He makes me as comfortable as Mr. Scully used to.
I'm sorry?
He makes me as comfortable as Mr. Scully used to.
Wait a minute. Look, I like Rob Snow, too, but are you saying that Rob Snow and Vin Scully are on the same level?
No. Just the comfort level with the voices.
All right, fair enough.
Just like you with yours.
Okay.
You know, thank you very much for this in-depth discussion, and we'll talk soon.
You are most welcome, and thank you very much for the call. I'll just take it back to the beginning, because I will not be paying any attention at all, at least to the beginning of the Pittsburgh Steelers Monday night football game tonight, as much as I am a dyed-in-the-wool, terrible towel-waving Pittsburgh Steelers fan. I will instead be with our friends at the Greater KW Chamber of Commerce. We're going to be over at the Delta in Waterloo for the annual Vine and Dine, which is an annual endeavor on the part of the Greater KW Chamber of Commerce to raise money for physician recruitment. A very important evening. I always enjoy my time there. I'm looking forward to seeing you. If you're going to be there, I'll be managing the auction stuff and taking money out of your pocket to go into physician recruitment. You're not going to give it to me. Don't worry about it. But we'll raise some money so that we can attract more physicians to this community. So that's where I'll be. I'll leave the cheering for my Steelers to Jay. Back to the phones we go. Chef D, my good buddy, how are you?
Mr. Farwell, how are you?
Well, I mean, in light of the fact that my Leafs have lost three in a row, I'm not great, but my Rangers have won six in a row. So, you know, you take a little bit of that and you give me something else and I'm okay.
Well, you know, I'm not supposed to talk about a certain hockey team.
That's right.
Which remains nameless right now, okay?
Well, because I'll have to hang up on you as much as I love you. So thank you for following the rules of the show.
Yeah, we're going to have to change that rule sooner than later. Because I just looked at it, Mike. My team, who should remain nameless, has the same amount of points as your team.
That can't be possible. Hang on, have you played twice as many games or something?
No, not at all, brother. We have the same amount of games and everything.
Really?
We're tied.
Okay, I'm checking the standings right now because, Chef D, not that I don't believe you, but I don't believe you. Let me see. That team says it's 9 points, and my team says, 9 points. But wait a minute. Wait, we have the exact same record, 4-4-1.
I know, right?
So why are we listed higher than you in the standings?
I don't know.
Oh, I know why. You know why, too. Admit it, Sheffy. In your heart of hearts, you wanted the Leafs to win on Saturday because you cheer for that other team, and we all hate Boston.
When I saw that Boston was winning, I made my day. and then my football team is playing really well right now. You know, the old Buffalo Bills.
Nah, the Buffalo Bills. Bills schmills.
Oh, yeah. You're Steelers, whatever.
I know.
Steel curtain, what kind of steel curtain do they have anymore?
You watch that steel curtain tonight, Sheffy. You'll see all about it. My buddy in there, TJ Watt, he'll show you what's what.
Oh, yeah. And then he's going to get hurt, and then you'll be out for this.
Well, that's true.
Right?
When's the next time? Do you know when the next time is our hockey teams play against each other?
No, I don't. I wish I did. I should have thought about that before calling, young man, but I didn't.
No, that's okay, because when they do, we'll make sure that we have a little conversation and or some sort. There it is. It's coming up on the 9th, so not this Saturday, but next.
Okay, well then, you know, we'll have to think of something that both of us like, and we'll have to make a little wager on it.
And you'll have to make a point of calling me first thing on Monday morning, the 11th, after that game on the Saturday night.
Oh, yes. You know what, between the two of us, I think we can remember.
Sounds good.
Have a great time tonight. Raise a bunch of money for the doctors. And, brother, we will talk sooner than later.
Always love hearing your voice, Sheffy. Thank you.
Bye.
Take care. You know what I love? Not just do I love him as a person, because he's such a great guy, and he's got some of the best energy you'll ever encounter. Everybody knows Chef D around here. But he follows the rules, even though he doesn't like them, and I get that. But I will hang up on you faster than you can say the name of that team that shall not be named. I will hang up the phone. I don't have many rules on this show. That's one of them. This is the Mike Farwell Show. It's your rant or rave edition of the 12 o'clock talkback hour, 570 News Radio. Well, it's only a talkback hour if we talk. So let's get right back to the phones. Kyle, good afternoon. Rant or rave?
I got a rant about my football team because they're just doing terrible this year, 4-4. So, I mean, I'm upset about it. So I shut the TV off on Saturday, but that's not why I want to call in. I got a question for you.
Okay.
So you do, obviously, Rangers broadcast, and maybe I'm not a tech person or a media person at all. But sometimes, you know, obviously every Friday I'm with the Cyclones with their games, but I want to come home after our games to see how the Kitchener Rangers do. And sometimes I look at replays on the YouTube or whatever by Rangers, or maybe it's Rogers TV or whatever. Is there a reason why the broadcast that you guys do through the radio is also not done through the TV? Like, is there a reason why you can't combine them as one? Because you guys are both live. Like, you know, you're live doing your radio broadcast about the Kitchener Rangers, and there's a TV side of things where the guys are commentating. I'm no disrespect to both sides. I was just curious on why there's not a reason why they're both kind of like combined, because if they're both live, why can't you just make it as one? You know what I'm saying?
I know exactly what you're saying. The simulcast is technically very possible.
Okay, I was just curious.
Yeah.
Nope, that's it.
Okay.
All right, thanks, Mike.
Kyle, real quick, I'm trying to think. What's your 4-4 football team?
Oh, I grew up in Oklahoma, and we don't have, at the time when I grew up, there was no such thing as a professional team because we didn't have professional teams, so it's the Oklahoma Sooners.
Oh, okay. So now you're talking Sooners. College ball. I got you.
I watched college football. I never got into NFL. No. I watched college ball. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I appreciate the call. Thanks, buddy.
Thanks a lot, man.
Yep. Okay. Bye-bye. I could nerd out on this forever because you know that I'm so lucky to work at the job that I work in. I was fascinated by radio since I was a kid. And to be here doing this show every day, I still feel like a kid in a candy store. I really do. And believe you me, in a candy store, I go to town. So without geeking out too much, Kyle is absolutely right. We could simulcast our radio broadcast over the pictures that you see on TV, especially because we are both Rogers entities. It is Rogers TV that broadcasts the Rangers games here locally, and it is a Rogers-owned radio station that also broadcasts the games. And that would also maybe give you the advantage of hearing the home broadcasters even when we're on the road. However, the challenge becomes with Rogers TV as a local cable station. They are governed by different rules under the CRTC. The mandate is different, and we have a lot of commercial advertising in our radio broadcasts. And so making the simulcast work so that you wouldn't hear too much advertising on the TV side, which they're only allowed to do so much and not as much as we're able to do on the radio side. It just doesn't, they don't fit together that way. Tis all. But the best advice I can ever give, especially when the team's on the road, put on the game on TV, turn down the volume, and sync it up with your radio. Oh, baby, Fixie and I will take care of you on those broadcasts. This is the Mike Farwell Show, your 12 o'clock talk back hour, 570 News Radio. Well, you know how the Talk Back Hour works, right? And on Mondays, we call it the Rant or Rave edition, so feel free to do either of those things, rant or rave, but give us a call and let's have a conversation. Back to the phones we go, and Phil is with us. Good afternoon, Phil.
Good afternoon. It's a great day. I'm going to do both. I'm going to rant and rave. First of all, Chef D, awesome, awesome person. He's old school, small town guy. We need more of him in this angry world. We need more Chef D's. Awesome guy.
I can get behind that.
The flip side, this is where a guy like me can get angry about anything. Washer fluid at the gas stations. I'm coming home the other day from Muskoka, and I go to grab the squeegee brush. They don't exist anymore, I found out, at the en route. They have a dispenser. You have to swipe your card to get washer fluid, but you actually want to wash your windows. And as all of us who know who love to go traveling to winter recreation, skiing, snowmobiling, you know, to the hockey rinks, how are we going to clean our mirrors, our side windows, and our brake lights on the 401 and the 400 if there's no washer fluid scrub brushes?
Hang on a second. Did you say you've got to swipe your card to get washer fluid?
And this one, I'm asking your viewers who commute to the various highways, is this a common thing that's happening at on routes where you don't have a squeegee brush and washer fluid anymore? Have they just snuck that by? I really hope I'm wrong, but I've seen this at two. I just saw that. And the next on route, I kind of, out of the corner of my eye, looked over and I thought, I see that dispenser again. It's a big blue dispenser. And I thought, have they taken away? Because that's just un-Canadian.
What are you supposed to do with the big blue dispenser?
Well, you swipe your card and it's got a little nozzle so you fill up your washer fluid dispenser. But I couldn't find any way to clean my window. So I hope I'm wrong. I'm hoping that the en routes will continue because, as we know, anybody who drives in the winter, you get that salt spray on your lights, your taillights, your brake lights, your mirrors. You can't see. So I really hope I'm wrong. That was a one-off, and I was just looking left, and I should have looked right. But please tell me that that's not happening.
All right, Phil. I appreciate that call. I hope not. I mean, I'm old enough to remember that you would drive into a gas station over the little hose that made the sound go ding, ding, and somebody would come out and ask you if you would like regular or unleaded. And then they would check, you'd pop the hood and they'd check the oil for you while you were there. Heaven forbid we don't even have washer fluid with a squeegee anymore. Come on. Really? I hope not. Back to the phones on our Talk Back Hour. Ernie, good afternoon.
Mike.
Oh, Ernie, you got some guts, buddy. You're calling in. We were talking about football a little earlier. You're not really calling in, are you?
I feel like you're baiting me here with all this black and yellow talk today.
Listen, I didn't start it.
couple of rants, a couple of raves here. My family and I, we went to the Mistake by the Lake on the weekend and just, you know, we watched that terrible game in Cleveland where the best kicker in the world missed a kick, Justin Tucker. Couple raves about that, though. Mike, I got to bring my favorite oldest son to the game. We paid $120 US for two club seats, regular $333 apiece.
Nicely done.
So when Cleveland does terrible, yes, you can get good seats, but then they beat us. So you know what? It was still a great time. They treated my son awesome, so that was really good.
Is he also a Ravens fan or is he a Browns fan?
No, I'm teaching him young. You're moving out at age. I don't care what age you are. You're moving out if you're not purple.
Okay.
From the very beginning. As well as blue and white. I teach them right that way. The other thing I just wanted to quickly mention, though, the fact that we can drive through downtown Buffalo during rush hour, drive to the game, no traffic, just going that whole way, there's less traffic than one little trip to Toronto. It just blows my, like, my wife and I were just talking, like, how can we just drive so freely here and get so frustrated on a little trip to go watch the Leafs or the Jays, you know? But other than that, Mike, I just had to represent my side a little bit with those black and yellow talk, and it is tough for me to call in today. I definitely had some guts.
You're a good man, Ernie. Thanks for the call.
Have a good one.
You too. I am a Steelers fan. Ernie is a Baltimore Ravens fan. We play in the same AFC Black and Blue North Division. And his Ravens took one on the chin from the Cleveland Browns yesterday. On the point, though, of the traffic, if you're heading south towards the border and then across, you know, Colin Robertson, who's our guy on the other side of the glass today, told me that he made two trips to Toronto this weekend. I wouldn't wish that on anybody. So, yeah, Ernie's not wrong. Like, making a trip to Toronto is a nightmare. But you want to go to Buffalo, you probably get there in the same amount of time. Back to the phones. Paul on the Talk Back Hour. Hello, Paul.
How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Oh, still recovering from last week. And believe it or not, I got a rave today.
All right. You're recovering from your trip up to Silver Dollar?
I am.
Okay.
But rave for you. Thanks for the birthday wishes that went out to my grandson.
You're very welcome.
And I wasn't able to make the call to say happy birthday to Alex myself. I really appreciated what you did there. Now, on another note, since it's Monday, I got an email or a text message from my buddy that lives just north of Bancroft. He sent me a picture, and there's actually snow on the ground.
Oh, dear.
And he said Trudeau is welcome to come over and go for a walk on the 57 acres that he's got up there. Of course, it's deer season, so he better not wear a brown jacket or anything like that. But he is welcome to go for a walk in the snow up at Bancroft, if he would so like.
Paul, thank you very much. It's good to know that the snow is there, should the Prime Minister wish to find it. Bill, you are on our Talk Back Hour. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Farwell. I went to my doctor on Thursday, and I have a very sore knee, so they gave me a requisition to get an X-ray. So when I go down, and I'm in Cambridge, so when I go down to get an X-ray, there's a sign there that says no X-rays. So I said, well, what's going on? She said, well, no X-rays today. I said, when can we have one? And she said, I don't know. So I said, what good's that? So I went to another one, same thing. So apparently there's a shortage of X-ray technicians, and the company that has X-ray places in Cambridge and Kitchener, whatever, obviously has pulled them all out of Cambridge, and we can't get one. So I did finally get a requisition, or finally did get one. I haven't got it yet, but I'm going on Wednesday for it, so I had to wait till this Wednesday to get one. That's a real problem.
It sure is. 6 days from getting the requisition, you could finally get the X-ray.
That's right.
It's not like you're asking for a knee replacement. You just want the X-ray.
That's right.
Goodness gracious me.
Now, you said you're going about talking about doctors. You can talk about X-rays, too.
We will add that to the list, Bill.
Thanks very much.
Thank you very much. Nice to hear from you today. And I'm really sorry that you're going through that, because that is not the state of our universal health care that we want it to be in, is it? We're up against the clock. We'll take a break. Joe, hang in there with me. Your call is next, and there's a line open for you if you want to be a part of the Talk Back Hour today. It's the Rant or Rave edition on the Mike Farwell Show, 570 News Radio. This being Monday, it is your Rant or Rave edition of the Talk Back Hour. Got a rant? Something you need to get off your chest? Share it with us. Rave works the same way. Just make the call and let us know what's on your mind. Back to the phones for Joe. Good afternoon, Joseph.
Good afternoon, Mike. I got a rant and a rave. So the Liberals have come out and admitted that they made some incorrect adjustments to the immigration policy after COVID. Incorrect adjustments. Are you kidding? How do you even respond to that? People across the country are livid. With all the voters are livid with the Liberals, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. So I didn't even know how to respond to that. But let's get to more pressing matters. Your Steelers, they're playing a garbage team tonight, and I don't know how they've been doing it, but they've been pulling it out. I got a good friend who's a Steelers fan, and I have no love lost for New York Giants, so I might have to lean on the side of the Steelers for this one. But here's my rave. How about those Lions? NFC. Leading the NFC with an iron fist. Did you see that good old-fashioned beatdown yesterday? Or the one before that? Last week. Beatdown, man. Beatdown. Go Lions. Cheers.
Cheers, Joe. I appreciate the call. I did see the score. I have no quarrel with the Lions or the Bills, even though I gave Sheffy a hard time. The only team in the NFL that I really, really dislike is the New England Patriots. And that's mostly because of the guy that used to be their quarterback. So I'll just leave that over there. And you cheer for your team. I'll cheer for mine. And I will support my team passionately, believe you me. I like Joe's point about the modifications to our immigration targets. And I'll take it back to what we talked about with David Drew today at 11:30. David joins us every Monday at 11:30 for Drew's Views, and he called it a virtue test. That's what immigration really has been in Canada, because up until now, when the federal Liberal government decided to change the numbers, lower the numbers, if you had just said, well, these numbers are too high, you would have been accused of being racist, you see. But when the federal government does it, because it realizes that, yeah, you know, might have miscalculated here, well, then it's okay. But it has turned into just that. I loved the phrasing that David Drew used today, the virtue test that it was, has been, is, whatever the case may be. Certainly the change to the targets is welcome to most. Let's go back to the phones. Ibrahim, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mike. How are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you, my friend. How are you?
Good, good. Good. Just I would like to comment on last week's video that you brought in. The young man was talking with one of the lady on the street.
Oh, yes, sir.
Yeah, just I wanted to talk to about that.
Yeah, so this was the young man who encountered a woman on the street that said, there are too many Indians in Canada, go back to India. Yes.
Yeah. Well, first of all, sum up for you, Mike, bringing that one maybe generate a lot of discussion or people. Also, they will know how the people, the immigrant, new immigrant, how they face this kind of problems. But I would advise him, because I live a long time here, and when I was working as a service with dealing with customers, I was working a couple of years ago with our local, one of our local cab companies. So you got some kind of questions. I thought someone, you know, telling me to go back. I will tell them, you know, you go back first. Because they will tell, oh, I was born here, but so what? Your father or your grandfather came here. Come on. This is a land of the immigrant, except the people who were first here, native. Native person never asks you that kind of question, because they know themselves they face that kind of discrimination because of the skin of the color. So I would advise that guy, if you're listening or other newcomers, just if someone, you know, that kind of idiot asking you that question, tell him you go back first, then I go after you. The second the comment is that you can't, police, they can't do anything. Even if you go, they were discussing, they were complaining in, on municipalities. They can't do anything. You can't make the rules, this kind of, even if you make the rule crazy like that, someone in the street walking or saying something, you can't really policing anything. But I would tell them, you know, face yourself, tell him or her, just go first, I come after you. This is the same like you came here or your grandfather came here. I came here for opportunity. Also, Canada invited me to come here. Thank you, Mike.
Thanks, Ibrahim. Listen, I get where you're coming from, and I'm certainly in no position to dictate how one who has been on the receiving end of such comments should respond. I am a believer, though, that two wrongs do not make a right. You attract far more bees with honey, and kindness costs us nothing. So maybe if our response is one that comes from a kinder place, then we can spread kindness. However, we do need to shine a light on these problems for sure. I also appreciate Ibrahim's point. We talked about it during All News Mornings today with Christine Clark and Luke Schultz, that the City of Waterloo at its council meeting tonight will be addressing this really awful incident that happened on the streets of the city. The video went viral. We've all seen it before now, and we've talked about it on the show, about this poor young man being berated simply because of his ethnicity. Ibrahim sadly is right. We can absolutely address it at council, and we can send the letter up the chain to MPPs and MPs and wherever that letter may go. But tragically, we cannot legislate kindness. We cannot legislate better behavior. All we can do is police against it. But if we can spread any message on this show about being kinder, behaving better, I'm happy to promote that message for sure. This is the Mike Farwell Show. It's your 12 o'clock talk back hour, 570 News Radio. Final minutes together on the show today, going back to some of the things we talked about this hour, including the call we got from Bill, who was unable to, after going to the doctor, complaining of problems with his knee, getting the requisition for an x-ray, this was in Cambridge, and then couldn't get the x-ray from multiple sites he visited. Ian sends an email to Mike at 570news.com. Just remember what I said a while back, open more private clinics. They will hire more nurses, technicians, and doctors. Where do you think they came from? The public system. So that some people who can pay can get their service a little faster. This is what you should expect from a two-tier health system. And Paul, emailing Paul, not calling Paul, who called earlier, but emailing Paul, writes to Mike at 570news.com. It's easy to throw hate on the political party in power. I have little love for them as well, but give an alternative and back it up. Your call-in people need to educate themselves. I don't know about that, Paul. Listen, the alternative is being made very clear. There will be a stark choice in the next federal election. You may not like that other choice once they get into power, but I guess that remains to be seen how they wield that power once it is achieved, right? Looking ahead to our program tomorrow, did you hear the one about corporate welfare and how much it's costing us here? What we could do to the debt if we just eliminated corporate welfare? And truckers again say highways in this province are not safe enough. What can we do to make them safer? We'll talk about those and other things on our program tomorrow. Time now to get you to the 570 News Center for an update. Rob Snow is standing by with Now You Know. You will be entertained by Rob for the next couple of hours until 3 this afternoon, and then you and I will get back together tomorrow morning at 9. Colin Robertson is our guy on the other side of the glass. My name is Mike Farwell. Bye for now.